This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 141 of the USDF's official podcast. I'm your host, Chris Stafford, and we would like to remind you that my views and those of the guests on this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. Coming up on the show this week, we'll be hearing from the USDF's Competition Department Manager, Christina Wright. She'll be here to tell us what to expect with the upcoming US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan. We'll also be learning about embryo transfer from Dr. Karen Wolsdorf. And finally, in our education segment, we will have part two from the 2015 USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum. And before we hear from our first guest this week, we have one item of news that the USDF has announced, and that is a unique educational opportunity for judges and FEI trainers that will be offered at the 2017 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference. In 2017, the USEF Judges Forum will be held in conjunction with the Trainers Conference. This unique event will give judges and FEI trainers the opportunity to interact, share ideas, and gain a unique perspective of the challenges faced by each, both in and out of the competition arena. This combined program will be held January the 16th and 17th, 2017, at Mary Ann McPhail's High Meadow Farm in Loxahatchee, Florida. The panel of presenters for the conference will be Lilo Four and Hans Christian Matheson. For more information about the conference, please email trainersconference@usdf.org, or of course you can visit the USDF's website at usdf.org. Christina Wright is the USDF's Competition Department Manager, and she's here to talk about the US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan, which will take place in the Kentucky Horse Park again from November the 10th through the 13th. So it's coming up very quickly, Christina. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
It is right around the corner, just a few short weeks now, to what has become really the highlight for many competitors, isn't it, in the year, because it covers all the levels all in one place and a fabulous venue. As we know, it's become the very successful finale to the year, hasn't it?
Yes. The U.S. Dressage Final certainly has, being held, of course, here at the Horse Park, November 10th through the 13th. It will be the national head-to-head competition, if you will, for the adult amateurs as well as the open division at all levels, training through Grand Prix.
Well, for those who may be new to this, Christina, let's start with a little bit of the background to the finals. Where did that all begin?
It actually began through their regional championship program, if you will. It was a program that had been thought about for many years and did take many years to come to fruition, if you will. But it qualifying for the U.S. Dressage Finals actually comes through the regional championship program, so that qualifying takes place at each of the 9 Great American USDF regional championship competitions throughout the country.
And they happen over the calendar year or since the previous Dressage Finals? So give us a sense for those who are thinking, oh gosh, I missed it this time, but I would love to go for it in the future. When does that qualifying period begin and what is the entry process for it?
Well, the qualifying period is through the regional championship competitions, and depending on the region, some competitions start early in September. Some of the regional championships, and some of the regional championships are not held until the middle of October in the warmer climate. So it's kind of that span of 6 weeks or so that in which the regional championships are held, and that's, of course, how riders can qualify is through competing in the open or the adult amateur regional championship classes.
Right, so they can find out more about that on the website, obviously, through their regions as well. Let's talk about this year's entries. What sort of numbers are you expecting?
Well, we're hoping to have probably somewhere around 375 horses or so compete.
And they arrive in the horse park the beginning of that week, don't they, to get acclimated, because they're going to be riding in the Alltech Arena, fabulous facility there. But to give us a sense of what they can expect if they haven't been there before.
Well, the Altec Arena is certainly a wonderful, climate-controlled, beautifully decorated indoor facility. Of course, we're going to have many, many dressage rings, so there will be outdoor rings as well. So we will have many different competition rings going at the same time, with the competition starting on the 10th of November. Most horses would choose to ship in on the 9th or so, but arrangements can be made if horses do need to ship in earlier to that date.
And for the stabling too, the barns right adjacent to the Altec Arena. So it's all very convenient once you arrive on that side of the horseback. It's very self-contained, isn't it?
Right, right. We certainly are using the some of the heated stabling there that is attached to the indoor arena, so that is an option for some of our riders should they choose that option.
Yeah, because the Kentucky Horse Park can be a little bit chilly that time of year, can't it? And it has presented quite a stage there for these finals each year. We're building the numbers in terms of attendance and spectators, participants, but also sponsors. Let's talk about the sponsors that have supported this big event that is really the climax of the year.
Right, right. We certainly do have a fair number of sponsors that do sponsor this program, and we're very happy to have those. Adequin being one of them, Smart Pack, Platinum Performance, as well as Stanley Forage Products.
All right, and yeah, and a lot of others that make up this family of sponsors.
Yeah.
All right, and yeah, and there are VIP packages that are available for anyone attending. Talk about those, Christina.
Well, we do have some VIP packages that can certainly enhance somebody's experience at the U.S. Dressage Finals. We have both week-long as well as just Saturday night VIP packages, and those can be purchased either individually or for a table of six. VIP access includes premium ringside seating, refreshments, breakfast, lunch, and dinner from Thursday through Sunday, dinner wine service, as well as breakfast and lunch on Sunday. And more information on those VIP packages can be found on the U.S. Dressage Finals website.
Absolutely. Just go to usdf.org/US Dressage Finals. Now, for anyone wanting to make last-minute plans to attend, what do they need to know at this point, Christina?
Well, at this point, they need to know that they will need to declare prior to the first day of the championship competition. And then there's also a nomination process that is required. And that's required to be done no later than Thursday midnight after the competition. And then the third step would be to enter the competition by the closing date of October 27th.
Very good. And is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about, Christina?
Well, yes. I would like to tell you about the Regents Cup. The Regents Cup is a team competition that's composed of regional teams. There's one regional team for each USDF region. Regional teams are based on the scores that are earned at the regional championship competitions. So each regional team consists of three horse rider combinations. Regional teams will be made up of one horse rider combination from each of the following categories: training and first level, second through fourth level, and FEI level. Adult amateurs may be named to the regional team in each of the three categories. However, the second through fourth level category must be an adult amateur. Open riders may be named to the regional team at training and first level and FEI level categories. The highest final score achieved by each horse rider combination in a non-freestyle U.S. Dressage Finals class at the required level will be used in calculating the regional team's results. Placings of teams will be determined by averaging the three scores as described. We're very excited about this new team competition and hope that it will grow in the future.
Information is continuously being updated and placed on the U.S. Dressage Finals website, so I would refer all competitors to the website. That contains not only current information, but the prize list as well.
Wonderful. All right. Well, that is an event to look forward to coming up here very shortly, just a month away now. Final countdown. A busy time for you in the office then, Christina, getting ready for these finals.
Yes, yes. With the regional championships just starting to wrap up and then the finals, it certainly is a busy time of year for us here.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the program and telling us a little bit about these finals. Again, the U.S. Dressage Finals presented by Adequan will take place in the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, Kentucky, from November the 10th through the 13th. Christina, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you very much.
And you'll find a link in the show notes accompanying this podcast to the U.S. Dressage Finals website. And now, our Senior Education Coordinator Sharon van der Zeel talks to Haggard Equine Medical Institute veterinarian Karen Walsdorf about embryo transfer and other options for mare owners as the breeding season arrives once more.
Dr. Walsdorf graduated from the University of Florida in 1992. In 1996, she joined Haggard Equine Medical Institute as an associate, and in 2002, she became one of the first two women members of the practice. Dr. Walsdorf's main interest is in infertility in the mare and problems during pregnancy. She spends her time working as a field veterinarian and as a specialist at the McGee Fertility Center. She has also authored many chapters on equine reproduction, as well as lectured worldwide and published research. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Can you start out by telling us what is embryo transfer?
Well, embryo transfer is a procedure by which we're able to breed a donor mare, and then she will go ahead and ovulate, and then we can come back anywhere from 6 to 8 days, usually post-ovulation, and we're able to flush the embryo from that mare's uterus. We then take the embryo and we place it into a recipient mare. And that recipient mare then kind of acts like a surrogate mother for the developing embryo and foal. And then eventually we'll go on to have that foal and raise it like her own. So it really allows basically a mare to have not only one potential offspring, but potentially more, two in one season.
So why would somebody want to do an embryo transfer?
Well, there are a couple of different reasons. The first one, and probably the majority of mares in this day and age, is because they're performance horses. They're competing at horse shows, and so this allows the mare the ability to have a baby and produce reproductively without actually being off for 9 months or 11 months. She's able to continue to work, and we can then do this procedure around her showing events. And so she stays in work and she has a baby at the same time. The other is that it allows wider gene pool. So some breeds will allow mares to have more than one embryo a year, and so they can have 4 or 5 different babies to different stallions in 1 year, which she can't obviously do naturally. And then probably the last reason would be for mares that have some kind of illness that aren't able to carry the uterus, that may have laminitis, and that when a mare is in foal, she gets heavier, puts more pressure on the feet, and so it causes her more pain. So with this method, you're able to therefore get a baby out of a mare that may not be so great environment when she's actually
heavy. So maybe like some of the older mares?
So especially like in older mares. Older mares that have big baggy saggy uteruses that may have chronic infections that it takes a lot to get them cleaned up, or their uterus is not a good environment because of age and lots of foals, this, you can still get an embryo from that mare and let it be put into a younger, healthier uterus that is better for the growth and development of the baby.
Yes, that sounds like a great option. So how has the popularity of embryo transfers changed in the sport horse world, and why do you think that is?
Well, I think that people are recognizing more that it's a viable option and that they can still continue to work their mare, like I mentioned before. And so all the breeds, really except for thoroughbreds, allow embryo transfer to occur, and then you just have to check on what breed-specific requirements are for inbred tanagers, because some will only allow one of the foals to be registered a year. Some allow more than that. But it gives the owner a greater diversity with what they can do with the mare, both work-wise and reproductive-wise.
So you told us a little bit about how it works, but could you maybe go into a little bit more detail about what the mare owner would be looking at as far as thinking about embryo transfer?
So there are two parts to the story. The first part is the donor mare, right? And that's the mare that we're going to be getting the embryo from. And that mare is basically whatever you want her to be. A lot of times they are the older mares, that we see at Haggard's because they have problems. But there certainly are lots of practices throughout the United States that do it routinely on normal performance horses. So anyway, what you need to do is you need to get that mare cycling and get her ready to be bred, meaning she needs to go through a culture and cytology, monitor her through her cycle so that we know what is the best time to breed. While we're doing that, we also need to make sure that we have recipients that are synchronized and are cycling the same way as the donor mare. Because what you want to do is you want to take that embryo from the donor mare and place it into the recipient mare at pretty much the exact same time in her cycle, mm-hmm. so that they are synchronized in their cyclicity. Because you can't take one mare that's ovulated 6 days and put it into a recipient mare that's ovulated 13 days ago. There is a mismatch then of the embryo and the uterine environment. So what we do is we'll breed the donor mare, make sure that we come back, she's ovulated, and then we'll come back at 7 or 8 days post-ovulation. We will take a catheter and pass it through her cervix, attach it to fluids, and we flush fluids into her uterus, and then we flush them back out. And when it flushes back out, there's a collecting dish that has a filter on it that allows the embryo to collect into this dish. It's actually quite amazing. Wow. You can't see it with your naked eye. And so what happens once you've flushed this mare, you take that collecting dish and you put it under a searching microscope, and you're able to find that embryo in the microscope, and then you're able to put that into a pipette, and then you take your recipient mare, and you're able to transfer that embryo through the cervix of the recipient mare and place it into the mare's uterus.
Wow, that's amazing. What is the average success rate of the embryo transfer?
So, like we've been talking a little bit about the donor mare. So it very much depends on the donor mare. A young mare that, you know, has maybe had one foal or two foals is probably going to be a better success rate than an old mare that has chronic inflammation or has fluid because of her conformation. So it really depends. But on average, when you are able to recover an embryo, usually about 70 to 80% of the time. But then you have to remember that you're manipulating the embryo, you're transferring it into another mare. And so usually you'll actually get a pregnancy in the recipient mare about 70 to 80% of the time that you transfer the embryo.
That still sounds pretty good. Typically, how soon after the transfer can you determine if the recipient mare is pregnant?
Well, you can usually, the earliest that we can see embryo on ultrasound is about 11 days post-ovulation. So if you flush the mare at day 6, then you can look at her day 11. If you flush her day 8, you can look at the recipient mare day 11. So day 11 is usually the earliest. I personally like to come back at day 13 or 14 post-ovulation. The embryos are a little bigger, and so you're able to see them more easily. But you can anywhere from 11 days to 14 days would be ideal.
Okay, great. And what kind of mare makes a good embryo donor, and what kind of mare makes a good recipient?
Well, the donor mares, you don't often have a choice of what makes a good one or a bad one, because the procedure mm-hmm. is one that you're going to do to her, whether it's good or bad. So you'd like her to potentially have had a couple of foals, history of no foaling injuries, and is young, so she has good healthy eggs and a good uterus that she's able to clear fluid around breeding. However, we don't always have that. A lot of times our performance horses are older maiden mares because they have gone through their performance career. They're getting to the end, and so they're starting to think about breeding them while they're still maybe the last couple years. So they're a little bit more difficult in that because they're 14 or 15 years old, their cervixes have never had a baby or expanded. Their cervixes remain pretty tight all around breeding, and so they can sometimes accumulate fluid in that process. So they're a little bit more challenging, even though they've never had a baby and they're young. And then you have the other extreme, that are the older mares that, again, will have issues just from having lots of foals, having more scar tissue in their uterus. So it's really dependent, again, how are you going to manage the mare on what her problem or her situation is. Now, for the recipients, that is a key, because you don't want to go to all this work to do an embryo, get an embryo, and then put it into a bad oven, so to speak, right? We want this embryo to cook and to grow in a healthy environment. And so the recipients that we like to put our embryos into usually range between 7 and 10 years. Preferably, they will have had a foal or two, so their cervix is relaxed. We know what they're like as a mother. You want them to be easy to handle because you're going to be working with them a lot. And so we want the best uterine environment for that embryo to develop that we possibly can have.
Yes, that makes good sense. Can horse owners register multiple foals by the same mare on the same year?
So it depends on your breed. And that's where you need to check with your breed registry. You can, in like the quarter horse industry, you can have numerous foals by different sires in the same year. With the standard bred industry, you can do numerous embryo transfers, but you can only register the first foal that's born. So it really is very breed dependent, and I would recommend for everybody to find out what their breed specifications are before they get into this.
Okay. Are there any breed registries that do not allow embryo transfer?
The only one that I know specifically is the thoroughbreds. Okay, any kind of artificial anything is not allowed in the thoroughbreds, unless, of course, you're not going to register them, or you're going to, if you have like a thoroughbred cross, or you're going to use your thoroughbred as a show jumper, you know, then of course you can, but you will not be able to register it within the thoroughbred breed as a racing horse.
Okay, so like the jockey club registration.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, well, great. That's all really great information. Is there like maybe three things that you could tell us that people thinking of looking into embryo transfer should know it?
The biggest thing is to think about who you want to breed your mare to. Make sure that your donor mare is doesn't have any infection in her uterus and that she's healthy and has a good environment there. And then also try and recognize what you're going to do about recipients. So there are different options with recipients. Some people will have their own recipient mares. You need to probably have at least 2 recipients per donor mare, because synchronizing those mares to cycle together can be somewhat difficult. So you want to have enough recipients for your donor mare. And the options there are either you have your own recipients, or there are also centers, recipient mare centers, that you can contact and say, hey, I want to do an embryo transfer. They'll send you a contract so that you know what it entails to ship the embryo to these centers where they have large numbers of recipient mares that you can transfer the embryo into. And then you will then get your mare back when she's pregnant. So it's mostly getting ready with that, to know where you're going to do what with the embryo.
And can they find those centers? Like, can they search for it online? Or
okay. Yes, absolutely. They're recipient herds. Okay. And so if you Google embryo transfer recipient herds, there should be a list.
Okay, and we'll try to put a link to that in our show notes also. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. I hope you'll come back sometime and talk
to us
again.
And I'd love to. Thank you.
And finally, in our education segment, we have part 2 from the 2015 USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum, which was presented by Dressage at Devon, a USDF education partner. Scott Hassler and Willie Arts discuss their philosophy on training young horses.
It's important, I think, what we talked about earlier, by a young horse. Yeah, a lot of times you see problems and complications that a horse has learned, and a lot of times nobody who starts a young horse wants to teach the horse bad habits. Yeah, but it happens by allowing it to happen is teaching. Yeah, if you allow the horse to do something, even if that is a form of teaching. Yeah, so it is very important that whatever you do, how you start a young horse, that you always try to do it gradually and make sure that you always can handle it and have an answer if you have a problem. So you don't create any problems that you need to undo later on. So the best way to say it is like allowing it to happen is teaching. So you always want to keep that in mind. Yeah, this is something that is very important, and a lot of times young horses don't get a chance. Yeah, from 3 till 4, this is what every horse needs to do. Then you build a foundation in the development of the horse that later on, if there is a problem that comes up, you have something to fall back on. Yeah, if a horse is pushed too much, yeah, then there is no foundation to fall back on, and then it becomes hard to get rid of a problem. Yeah, so you like to introduce a little bit, yeah, not so much that you make him quicker, but that you just make transitions wherein you feel you can adjust the horse. Yeah, the adjustment of a horse, yeah, from your leg, that is where the development is off the gates. Yeah, so but instead of that, you slow them down with your hands. It's your upper body that controls the tempo. The neck of the horse is the horse is able to use his neck as his balancing pole. Yeah, he can just use it swinging. And this horse is light, not because the horse is with his head on the vertical, but the horse is light because the horse is following the hands of the rider, and the horse is carrying himself or herself. A big gait is only good and valuable if you also can make it small. The moment you come with your leg, you should just feel, yeah, that the horse has a desire to go forward. And then the horse, with the engagement and the reaction from the hind leg, he reacts forward over the back towards the bit, and he wants to bring his neck down and follow your hand. It's just, you challenge him here, you say, okay, relax, slower, and then keep his attention, slow. So now your communication and the horse is going to be more and more focused on you because the horse is getting smaller, more relaxed. And every time you feel that you get a positive reaction, you know, you give the horse the tendency to stretch his neck. Yeah, that's like the horse puts it in his memory bank, yeah, like the hard drive. Every time a horse gives you a positive reaction on your exercise, yeah, even if you just give the horse for a half a circle, just a few steps, yeah, that he stretches his neck, then the experience of the horse is positive and the horse is going to remember. Yeah, yeah, it is very easy and tempting to have a three-year-old and have him move around really big and show off how much he has. But for the horse's development, yeah, this is better. Yeah, and that he learns every time you come with your leg, your leg gets a direct reaction from the hind leg. So it's not that you come with your leg and you feel that the horse breaks up the front leg bigger, the neck goes forward, and then the hind legs start pushing. Yeah, you want to feel, yeah, that you come with your leg and that the horse relaxes his neck, stretches down towards the bit, and you can make the hind leg more active. Yeah, you don't need any more pushing power. Yeah, you don't need any of that. You only need access to the hind leg, and that the horse gives a reaction in the hind leg, and that he learns to bring the neck a little bit lower and the withers up. And then once you feel a little bit that in your bridle there, just keep your hands quiet. And when the horse wants to follow your hand, you come with your leg again. You got to be able to bring his neck down and ride the neck forward towards the bit from your leg. If you feel this is, he stays there, you might try to make a transition almost to the walk, and then you continue on to trot. And if you can get a reaction without that he goes forward, that's even better. Yeah. So once the horse comes back, his neck stays round, and you can get a reaction on the hind leg without that he immediately goes faster, that's even better, because then the horse learns to react from your leg in the same tempo. It doesn't do you any good if a horse stretches his neck and you don't have access to the hind leg. Yeah, the horse has to stretch his neck while you have influence and that you can adjust the horse. Yeah, and you feel yourself in your riding that you constantly keep thinking forward, and you ride your horse from behind towards the bit. And here the horse will automatically find your hands, follow your hands. Nice. Simple work. And the neck gets shaped from behind. Yeah, the neck is not shaped. The neck is not held in place with your hands. Your hands have to be quiet so that the horse can follow your hands and carry his head and neck quiet. Yeah, but the horse has to carry his head and neck himself. Yeah. The neck gets lighter, not because he curls up, or the neck gets lighter because the horse swings through the back, follows your hands.
And the USDF is delighted that Scott Hassler and Willie Arts will be returning as the co-presenters at this year's USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum, which will be held October the 22nd and 23rd at Pineland Farms in New Gloucester, Maine. And before we go this week, we have a couple of reminders for you. Number one, the USDF judges and freestyle committees would like competitors' input on the current USDF and US Equestrian Federation's tests, which include introductory through fourth level, freestyle, pas de deux, and quadrille. You can send all your comments and suggestions to judgescommittee@usdf.org. And the deadline for that is November the 1st. And finally, don't forget to check your scores for the 2016 competition season, which ended on September the 30th. Visit usdfscores.com now to check your scores, and all score corrections must be submitted to the USDF no later than October 15th at 5 p.m. Eastern. Please note that no corrections of any kind to the award standings will be accepted after this deadline. You can email any questions or score corrections to scorecorrections@usdf.org. And whilst you're on the website, be sure to visit eTrack for all the latest educational information and resources. And if you're listening to the podcast on the website, remember you can also download it from iTunes to any podcast app on your smartphone or tablet, so you can listen to the show on the go. And if you follow us on Facebook and Twitter, you can find out when the next episode of the podcast will be live. Until next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.